We're continuing in Likutei Moran, Chelek Aleph, Torah Hey. In our Likutei Moran, it's on page 12, the right-hand column, the bottom paragraph of the page. That's where we're up to right now. This is a chapter that we've been discussing already in about three shiurim, and we're not going to review the three shiurim because tonight's entire shiur is actually going to be a summary of what we learned till now, and plugging it into a story in the Gemara. Rabbeinu Zal taught us a whole procedure relating to coming close to Hashem and dealing with different circumstances in religion. And tonight, Rabbeinu Zal is going to show us how there is a story in the Gemara that seems at first glance to be unrelated completely to what we learned so far. And yet you're going to see as we explain it that each item in the story relates to a different piece of the puzzle that we discussed. The story that Rabbeinu Zal had said was about the fact that Rabbi Bar Bar Chana was once riding in a ship, and the ship came upon a place where it rode on a fish, a huge fish, and the ship was riding between the two fins of the fish. And this went on for a period of 3 days and three nights that the fish traveled along the length of this fish. The fish was going upstream against the wind, and the ship was going with the wind. And if you might think that the ship must have been crawling very, very slowly, if for 3 days and three nights it was moving along the length of one fish, the Gemara says, Rav Dimi said that in the amount of time that it would take to heat up a kettle of water, this fish traveled a distance of 60 parsi. A parsa is approximately 4 miles, which means it traveled 60 parsi, which means 240 miles. In the amount of time that it takes to heat up a kettle of water, which is minutes. And also, there was an archer that was standing on the seashore, and he shot an arrow from his bow, and the ship was able to beat out the arrow. And Ravashi commented about this fish, that the name of this fish is called Gildana Diyama, a certain special fish of the sea, which has these two fins, these two long fins, one on either end. This is the story from a story that's presented in the Gemara Baba Basra, which obviously has additional meaning to it, besides the basic story itself. Rabbeinu Zal is going to take this story now and dissect it piece by piece. He's going to show you how each word that's used in the story is actually a term that we mentioned early in this Torah, and Rabbeinu Zal is going to review and summarize and show you how this whole Torah will help a Jew in religion, how to apply this to ourselves.
And he shot the arrow, and the fish was able, and the ship was able to block it out. Like the fish, the arrow went into the ship.
No, an archer was standing on the shore, and he shot an arrow ahead of him, in front of him. The arrow was traveling, let's say, a distance of 1,000 feet. The ship was moving in the same direction as the arrow, parallel to it, and we saw that the ship went faster than the arrow.
I mean, the fish was pushing it.
The fish was not pushing the ship at all. The ship was traveling along the length of the fish. On the contrary, the fish was going in one direction, the ship was going in the other direction, above it. Not touching necessarily. Over it. In between the two fins. A fin in front and a fin in back on either side.
The ship wasn't resting on the fish? Wasn't touching
the fish? I don't see it here.
Visagoi
svinta bain shitza l'shitza. The ship traveled between the two fins of the fish. I don't see any mention that it was resting on the fish. Because again, it seems to be implying that they were both going in opposite directions. Not necessarily that the ship is, the fish is sitting on the fish and scraping its back or something like that. Not necessarily. Now Rabbeinu Zal explains. The Aramaic word for ship is svinta. Svinta means a ship. And Rabbeinu Zal says, svinta loshen chashivus. The word svinta also means something important. In Hebrew, the word safun means important. Do bechinas givura, yira. The ship here represents givura, power, and fear. Fear comes from power. The word Gevura in Hebrew is Bigimatria 216. The word Yira is also Bigimatria 616. Because 216. Because Yira is synonymous with Gevura. We fear the power and strength of something. It's Gevura that causes a Yira, a fear. So Rabbi Nezal says, when the Gemara mentions the ship, the Aramaic word for ship, Sfinta, it's also being marames, it's hinting to that which is important, which means fear. Fear of Hashem is something which is important. Where do we see that? There's a pasuk in Yeshaya that says, Yiras Hashem hi oitzoroi. That if you want to know a king, the wealth of a king is stored in his treasury. When we talk about the wealth of a king, that's not what you find in his palace. The most significant wealth, the most important parts of the Ashiras of a king are not what you see in the palace itself usually, it's what's locked up in the vaults, in the safe. Kaviyochel, Hashem is a king, right? Hashem has many different attributes. Hashem has chesed, Hashem has malchus, Hashem has this. What does Hashem keep in his vault? The pasuk says, Yiras Hashem, hi oitzoroi. Fear of Hashem, that's the treasury of Hashem. In a sense, that's the most precious thing, that's the most important thing, that Kaviyochel Hashem keeps it locked up in his vault. So we see when the Gemara is referring to Sofun, something that's choshuv, it's referring to Yiras Hashem, Rabbi Nezal says. Next, Shitzo, the word fin that the Gemara uses, Shitzo, Loshen Tzora, refers to troubles, problems. As you'll find in the Chumash, where the Pasuk says when the Jews worshipped the golden calf, or when the Meraglim came back with their bad report, Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, step aside, va'achale oisam kiroga, and I will destroy the Jews in a second. The Targum on the word va'achale is va'ashatze yosoin. To destroy them is shatze. So we see shitzo refers to destruction, suffering, pain, destruction. We're going to give you first each word, an association, and then we'll piece the whole thing together. Next, Tlosa Yoima v'Tlosa Leilasa. In the story, it mentions 3 days and 3 nights. What does that symbolize? 3 days and 3 nights, Do Bechinas Mitzvois. That represents the mitzvois of the Torah. Why? Sheyesh bohem muskolois umekubolois v'chukois. Within the mitzvois, as they're described in the Sforim, they fall into three categories. Muskolois, those that are logical, where we understand the reason why you're not supposed to kill, why you're not supposed to take something that doesn't belong to you. There are mekubolois, certain mitzvois which are less logical. In other words, we understand them to a degree. We're told to celebrate Pesach, let's say, the holiday of Pesach, because there was a miracle. But it's not a matter of muskel sechel. It's not as logical as understanding why you shouldn't hurt somebody or something like that. There's less of a sechel to it. In other words, there are deeper reasons, naturally, regarding the holidays. But that's a second category. And then there's the third category, which is chukos, which are mitzvahs where we are told clearly that the Torah does not specify a reason for it, where generally we do not understand any simple, basic reason for this mitzvah. There are very deep reasons that are revealed in the writings of Kabbalah, or that'll be revealed when Moshiach comes, but for now, the reasoning behind those mitzvahs is generally assumed to be unknown. So we see that the mitzvahs are three groups. And why night and day? Why does the Gemara refer to 3 nights and 3 days? Because about the mitzvahs of the Torah, the term that's used is night and day. It says about the mitzvahs, you should perform the mitzvahs day and night. So that when the Gemara uses this term, 3 days and 3 nights, that's another way of referring to mitzvahs. Mitzvahs can be nicknamed three, because of the three groups of mitzvahs, days and nights, because about mitzvahs it's written that it's something that applies day and night. Next, Ihu bezekifu va'anan b'shipuli, the Gemara says that the fish was going against the wind, and we were traveling downstream with the wind. Ze bechinas yismach Hashem b'ma'asov, yismach Yisrael b'oisov. This corresponds to a concept that Rabbeinu Zal mentioned in this chapter, where he said that just as the Torah tells us that Hashem has pleasure from what He has created, the pasuk says yismach Hashem b'ma'asov, that Hashem looks at a Jew who's living the right way, and Hashem gets simcha from every single action that that Jew does. Rabbeinu Zal says in one place that when a religious Jew simply turns his payas, that gives Hashem a nachas ruach, if it's being done the right way, in a positive way. So too, so that's a flow that's going from us to Hashem, this flow of nachas and simcha that's coming from us and going to Hashem. So too, there's a flow in the opposite direction of Yismach Yisroel b'Oisov. Bnei Yisroel rejoice with every action that Hashem does. We see the sun come up in the morning. We get simcha from that. We draw a joy from every move that Hashem makes. So you have these two things, this simcha flowing in two directions. It's flowing from the Yidden to Hashem, and it's flowing from Hashem to the Yidden. This is this concept that's mentioned in the story of one thing going one direction, one thing going the other direction. Kemecham kum komodamayo, the time that it takes to heat up a kettle of water, do moicho, that represents the brain. Kemoishe kosuv, as the pasuk says, v'noizlim min levonoin, and they pour forth from Lebanon. This refers to a body of water that pours forth from Lebanon. That's the literal translation in the pasuk. The Zohar HaKadosh says the word levonoin also means libuna demoicha, the white matter of the brain. Lebanon, levonoin, refers to the moyach. The Arizal says the word levonoin is two words, lamed beis, which represents chachma, lamed beis nesivos hachachma, and nun is bina, nun shari bina. So we see that the word levonoin, refers to the brain, which has in it chachma and bina. So the word levonoin refers to the brain, v'noizlim min levonoin, there pours forth from the brain the thoughts that come from a person's mind, and the Torah that a person fills his mind with represents this water that's being heated up. Why heat? Ner Elikim Nishma Sodom. The Neshama is represented by fire, heat, warmth. Rabbeinu Zal brings in one term, Ikutei Moran, that Kifi Tnuas Hasechel Kein Noilat Chamimus Halev. That according to how much a person uses their brain and thinks a lot, and the mind goes from one thought to the next, it's moving, that motion stirs up a warmth in the person's heart. That's what gives a person a lev toiv, a warm heart, this seichel, this tnuas haseichel, this movement of the brain. So we see that we're talking about warmth, heating something up. Heating up a kettle of water is symbolic for the brain. Next, mizgi shitin parsa, the time that it takes to heat up a kettle of water, the ship traveled 60 parsa, do bechinas gevurois. The number 60 represents Gevura, the power of Hashem, Shishim Giboirim. There's a pasuk in the Torah that says Shishim Giboirim Sovivlo Migiboire Yisrael, that Shlomo HaMelech surrounded himself with 60 strong men. So we see that Gevurois relates to this number 60 in particular. V'ra'am Gevuroisov. And we know that Gevura also is related to thunder. Thunder is an act of the Gevura of Hashem. Proof is that the bracha that we make on thunder is Shekoichoi Ugvurasoi Mole Olam, that Hashem's power fills the world with this thunderous sound. So we see that the number 60 refers to Gevurais, which is connected with thunder, Ramin. Next, V'chishodi Prosho Gira, and when an archer, afterwards, when an archer, prosha is an archer, a person that shoots a bow and arrow, would shoot Gira, his arrow. Rabbein Azal explains now. The word prusha, also do bechinas chesed, that refers to kindness. Shehu moitzi lo'or ta'alumais. If one person doesn't understand something, and a second person comes along and explains it to you where you understand it, the person who didn't understand it, we say that to him, this was a closed item. A person says, this is a closed book to me. That means I don't understand anything that it says there. If somebody else comes along and clarifies it for me, we say he opened up the doors for me to be able to understand it. That's the expression that's used. Closed is always an inyan of gvura, tzimtzum, constriction. Open is always an inyan of chasodim. Poiseach es yodecho maspi alecho chayrotzim, that's an inyan of chesed. So Rabbein Azal explains, prusha, an archer, the word prusha is also lifaresh, to explain, which is an inyan of chesed. Dvorim hametzumtzomim humefaresh oisam. Items that a person doesn't understand, that are constricted, that are locked up, that are closed, he opens them up. That's an inyan of chasodim. Do and gira, the arrow, what does the arrow represent? Do shlach chitzecho utuhumein. In the same capital of Tehillim that we quoted earlier, where the pasuk says, Hashem says to Avram Avinu, shev liyamini ad oshe soivecho hadoim l'raglecho. Hashem says to Avram Avinu, take a seat over here on my right and watch me smash your enemies. So we said earlier that this shows that even when it comes to gevurais, there's an inyan of chesed also that has to be associated with it. By Hashem, there isn't only gvura. Even the gvura has to be mixed with chesed. So we see when Hashem is talking about smashing, which is normally assumed to be gvura, Hashem introduces it by saying, shev liyamini, sit down on my right. In that same chapter of Tehillim, the pasuk says, shlach chitzecho utahumeim. Hashem, send forth your arrows, and confuse the goyim, get them all terrified. Rabbein Azal says, do bechinas shev liyamini. That's associated with this sitting on the right side, just as we had in this week's parsha. Yemincha Hashem ne'dori bakoyach, yemincha Hashem tiratz oyev. We're talking about smashing, crushing the enemy, and yet the pasuk refers to yemin, the right hand, which is normally associated with chesed. We see that there's a concept of being mishatef, combining the gevura with chesed. Next, kodmolei ihi, it says that when he shot the arrow, we said the archer and the arrow represent chesed. The ship represented yira. When these two were racing, the ship went first. The ship came in first. Rabbein Azal explains, do bechinas yira shehi koidim. This represents the fact that yira, fear, must precede ahava, love. Fear, respect, must come before love. Shehayira hi koidemes. Yira must come first. Kamay shekosav, as the pasuk says in Tehillim, reishis chochma yiras Hashem. That before chochma, before anything in religion, the first thing you need is fear of Hashem. That's step one. Period. Up to here, we were simply defining pieces of the puzzle. We didn't put it together yet in any way. Now Rabbein Azal is going to piece together the whole puzzle for us again. Rabbein Azal says, Sherabba Bar Bar Chona Siper, Rabba Bar Bar Chona related, Sheholach Kol Kach B'midas Hayira, that he traveled so deep into the knowledge of this concept of Yira, to get to understand this concept of fear of Hashem really well. V'ro'o goydel koyach hayira. And he got to understand how important and how great Yira is. Ad sheyochoy lochovin al yodo bein koydim gzardin la'achar gzardin. Where this item is so important that a Jew who is zeicha to perfect his Yira, that Jew can be zeicha to be able to tell what's going on in Shemayim. He can tell what's actually going on in heaven, whether Hashem has already issued a decree against him or not, whether it's Koidim Gzardin or Acha Gzardin. V'zehu bein shitzo l'shitzo. As we explained earlier, va'ashatze means to destroy. The person can differentiate between Shitza and Shitza, which means before Shitza and after Shitza, before Gzardin and after Gzardin. And Rabbi Bar Bar Chana goes on to explain how this is brought about, how a Yid is zeichet to get to be able to understand Ben Kodim Gzardin Lachar Gzardin. How? Through Yira, we said earlier that Yira is a concept of thunder, and thunder smooths out the crookedness in the heart. And when the heart is smooth, a person is zeichet to be able to do mitzvahs. When the heart is smooth, the heart is mole simcha, as the pasuk says, ule yishre lev simcha, that a person who has a smooth heart has simcha. And when a person has simcha and is able to do the mitzvahs with real simcha, mitzvahs are one with Hashem. The word mitzvah is identical to the word yud kei vav kei. We told you earlier that the vav hei is the same. Mem and tzadik in atbash are yud and hei. They're exchanged to become yud hei. So mitzvah is Hashem. If I am zeichet to do a mitzvah with super simcha, I actually plug myself in to the simcha of Hashem himself. Because we said earlier, there's a concept of yismach Yisrael and yismach Hashem. When my simcha is bishlemus, I'm able to tie into Hashem, to fit myself to a glove, like a glove to Hashem, and I'm able to tell exactly where Hashem is at, kaviyochel. Where, by feeling the simcha of Hashem himself, I'm able to tell whether it's koidim gzardin or achar gzardin. Because certainly, after a gzardin is issued, it's felt within the simcha of Hashem. The simcha of Hashem, kaviyochel, is nismait. For example, when Hashem brought the mabul on the world, the pasuk says, vayis atzev eliboy. Kaviyochel, as if we could say, Hashem went into atzvus. So a person who was really plugged in well to the simcha of Hashem would have been able to feel clearly that there was a drop. Kaviyochel, Hashem went into atzvus, which means a red light goes off. Gzardin was issued. And then he knows, now Rabbi Nizal says, V'dafka kisho... Through the mitzvahs, which are represented by these 3 days and three nights, the person is able to understand whether it's koidim gzardin or achar gzardin. How? Only when the mitzvahs are done with true simcha. Rabbi Nizal explained earlier, what do we mean by true simcha of a mitzvah? When a yid is zeicha to have such emuna in Hashem and emuna in the Torah, where he feels a simcha. His simcha is not from something that he's going to get in the future. His simcha is not that if I'm good for an hour now, I'm going to get a lollipop an hour from now. His simcha is at the time that he's doing the mitzvah. At the time that he's serving Hashem, that's his greatest pleasure. That's his greatest joy. He elevates himself to a level where he actually feels pleasure in learning Torah, or in getting up early to go to shul, just as another person feels pleasure in licking an ice cream cone. He feels, lahavdil, a pleasure, a joy, in ruchnius, which we know is a level that people can definitely get to. Tzadikim get to a point where they exchange what people call normal, what's considered by the world normal. Normal is that you enjoy lollipops and ice cream cones and those kind of pleasures. And a person considers going to shul or learning or working, you know, at some kind of mitzvah. He considers that an effort, a difficult item. By tzaddikim, they switch it around. For them, it's difficult. It's a bother for them to eat and to drink and to sleep. And their greatest pleasure and joy is when they're davening, learning, doing mitzvahs, things like that. Through true simcha in your mitzvah, that's how a person is zeichet to understand. Ki HaKadosh Baruch Hu mesameach b'masov, because the Torah tells us that Hashem gets tremendous joy and pleasure from His creations. V'hasimcha hi melubeshes b'mitzvos kanal. Where is Hashem's simcha found? Hashem's simcha is found in His mitzvahs. The mitzvahs are kaviyochel containers in which Hashem's simcha is found. If a Jew reaches a certain height, he's able to taste that. He's able to feel the simcha that Hashem has poured into each mitzvah. Proof is, there's a pasuk, Pikudei Hashem Yeshorim, Mesamchei Lev. We have a clear pasuk in Tehillim that says that the commandments of Hashem are yosher, smooth, Mesamchei Lev, and they bring joy to a person's heart. So we see the Torah testifies, you should know that Hashem has designed these mitzvahs in such a way that there is simcha in them. And if you don't feel that simcha, it's not because it's not there. It's because you're not plugged into it. Something's missing in you. Something has to be improved in you that you should be able to plug into that simcha. Rabbi Nezal says now, V'anachnu misamchim lemato gam kein b'kodesh baruch hu. And we Jews below on earth, we also have pleasure, have joy from Hashem. K'moy shekosev, as the pasuk says, Yismach Yisrael bi'oiso, that the Jewish people are happy with Hashem, with all of Hashem's good things that He does for us, that we see. Ve'ein ritzoneinu b'shum schar afilu schar olam habakanal. And we, the true good Jews, we don't even have any interest in any reward, in any future reward at all. We're not even interested in olam haba. We're only interested in serving Hashem now. That's the only pleasure we want. We're not thinking about what we're going to get for this. If something's hard for me and I do it for you, I expect you to give me a reward for it. But if I enjoy something, does a parent say, listen, if you eat that ice cream and enjoy it, I'll give you another ice cream as reward? That's ridiculous. It's something pleasurable. We don't usually relate reward with something pleasurable. So Rabbi Nezal says, when a Jew is zeichet to feel the true simcha of a mitzvah, he's not looking for Olam Haba at all. He's not thinking about Olam Haba at all. This is what it means in the Gemara when it said, Ihu bezikifu vanan b'shipulu, b'shipuli, lefi simchosoi kein simchosenu, meaning he was moving in one direction, we were moving in the opposite direction, at the same speed, the same way. However we were going, he was going the same way in reverse. Kaviyochel, according to Hashem's simcha, that's how our simcha is. Both are related and tied into each other very well. Just as the simcha is flowing from Hashem to us, we have a simcha that's flowing from us to Hashem. Rabbi Nezal says, "Va'idezeh anachnu yecholim lahovim," and through that we can be zeicha to get to understand whether it's koydim zardin or achak zardin. V'hodar mefarish. And now Rabbi Nezal goes on to explain how is a Jew zeicha to feel this kind of simcha shel mitzvah. We know that 99.9% of Jews, when they do a mitzvah, don't feel anything like this. They don't feel the same thing as somebody else feels when eating an ice cream cone or hitting a home run or whatever each person finds pleasurable to them. So the question is, what can I do as a Jew to be zeicha to get to this level, that I should enjoy doing a mitzvah? Rabbi Nezal explains, V'zehu ki oso Ravdimi omar kemecham kumkum adamaya. Ravdimi came along and said, you know what this is related to? It's related to heating up a kettle of water. Hainu b'chinas koil ramcho bagalgal. This means that what's necessary is you have to perfect your brain. As we explained earlier, you have to first clean out from your brain any machshavos zorois or hirhurim roim, any bad thoughts, any thoughts of philosophy, thoughts of wrong types of questions about Hashem, or illicit types of thoughts, thoughts about committing sins that a Jew is not allowed to do, these kind of things. Shitin, why is the number 60 used? That in the time that it took to heat up a kettle of water, the ship traveled 60 miles. Shitin, zebechinas givurois hapoigin bigalgalta. This refers to what we said earlier, that how does a person clean out his brain? By davening tefillah b'koyach. When a person davens loud and the sound of his words crashes against his brain, that clanging sound, that noise that it makes, you picture something striking, throwing a rock on a bell, on a piece of metal, where it gives off a loud bang, v'nasa mimenu ramim. That creates a thunderous sound, a loud sound. V'ishtama kola. And this sound is heard by everybody. This refers to how important it is for a yid to daven out loud, because the Gemara says that the koil stirs up the kavona, that the sound of a person's voice arouses his concentration, that he's able to concentrate better, which means concentrating is something that's done with the brain. We want to improve the brain. What improves the brain? Koil improves the brain. The sound, when a person davens tefillah with noise, making noise when he davens, that sound is ma'ira, it arouses and improves the brain and removes from it the things that are in there that don't belong in there, the machshavah zorois and hirhurim roim. Then once the brain is clear and well, that person's brain is gives off that the sound that's made is thunder. In other words, when a person is davening out loud and clearing out the brain, the sound that's coming forth from hitting a clear object, not a dull object. When you hit an item that's full, you take a can that's filled up and you bang on it, it doesn't make any loud noise. You empty the can, the sound of striking an empty can makes a loud noise. So that when a person is able to empty their brain from whatever doesn't belong there, these machshavos zorois, hirhurim roim, and those things, and then he goes and davens loud, the sound striking against the brain, that sound the Zohar HaKadosh refers to as thunder. And we know that the Gemara says thunder has certain results. Thunder smooths out the heart. The Gemara says that thunder smooths out the heart. So by this, the person is zoichet to smoothen out his heart. And smoothening out of the heart means being zoichet to simcha. When a person's heart is filled with crookedness, it doesn't allow the person to be really happy. The Pasuk says, Uli yishre lev, simcha. Those that are zoichet to smoothen out their heart, they're zoichet to true simcha. This simcha is applied to the mitzvah, and thereby a person is zoichet to be able to know Ben Kodim Zardin, La'achar Zardin. Bechinas, Loi Nivru Ramim, as we learned earlier, that thunder was created for this specific purpose, to smooth out the crookedness in the heart. V'chodar Om, okay, question.
Very important. That's the Bechina of davening the kol. Is that Rabbeinu Zal talking about Shmoneh Esrei also?
Except we mentioned in earlier Shurim, the only part of the davening that should not be said out loud is Shmoneh Esrei. Regarding Shmoneh Esrei, it's interesting to note that the Shulchan Aruch says that a person should daven Shmoneh Esrei low enough where nobody else but you can hear what you're saying. The Zohar HaKadosh says that a person should daven Shmoneh Esrei so quietly where you yourself do not hear what you're saying. Your own ears, there should be no sound coming forth from the mouth. It should be a cry from within, from the chest, from the lower parts of the body, that goes direct to the brain. It's heard in the brain without escaping from the mouth, bringing up a sound, a screaming inside that's not being expressed at all through the mouth. Our Rebbe Zichron Avrocha favored the opinion of the Zohar HaKadosh, which stresses, you know, this davening so silently where you yourself don't hear. Unfortunately, most people that try to daven loud enough that they should hear it, they miscalculate a little, and people standing nearby them end up hearing it, which certainly, according to all opinions, is incorrect. Everybody agrees that Shmoneh Esrei should not be said where anybody standing next to you could hear what you're saying.
I think you're supposed to say it, that you shouldn't hear it, but there should be a sound coming out.
What made you think that?
I said,
so I just told you that in the Shulchan Aruch, that is what's mentioned. In the Shulchan Aruch, it says that when a person is davening Shmoneh Esrei, they should daven.
He should hear it. That he should make a sound, but he shouldn't hear it.
Too low for even himself to hear.
But there should be a sound.
Some sound.
No. We're talking about no. According to the Zohar Kodesh, the Zohar Kodesh bases it on a pasuk in Vayigash, where the pasuk says "Vahakoil Nishma Beis Paroi," and the word "koil" is spelled without a vav choser. The Zohar Kodesh says, which sound is it that's heard in the Beis HaMelech? It's koil choser, meaning choser koil, which means for this particular part of the tefillah, only Shmoneh Esrei must be said quietly. And as important a halacha as it is to say Shmoneh Esrei quietly, that's how important it is that the rest of davening should not be like a morgue. A shul should not be like a morgue where there's no sound. A shul should be alive with noise. You hear here how much Rabbeinu Zal is stressing this. There should be the sound of tefillah. Not that one person should be davening loud in an ostentatious way. If everybody davens the way they're supposed to, obviously nobody's going to stick out. It'll look normal. It's a blend of koilos. Whereas if some people are negligent, it makes other people look like they're being overkill. Now Rabbeinu Zal says, V'chodar omar, and then the Gemara went on to, Rabbi Bar Chana went on to explain, She'ikr hisgabrus hagvurois eno enoi elo al yidei achasodim, that this whole concept of thunder and loud noise and all of these items which are related to gevura, power, din, you should know that all of it comes from chesed. It originates from chesed. V'tzorech la'achlalo smolo b'yamino, and a Jew must always see to it to combine the right and left. Where do we combine the right and left? In tefillah, in Shmoyin Esrei? There's a special Indian. The Gemara says that when the rabbis of the Gemara used to stand in Shmoyin Esrei, they would keep the right hand and the left hand together. Unless a person's holding a sitter. If you're holding a sitter, automatically your hands are united on the sitter. But if not, a person who knows Shmoyin Esrei by heart and is sure that even without looking into a sitter, they're going to concentrate perfectly well, such a person, the hands are supposed to be clasped together. Why? To show this uniting of right and left, chesed and din, chesed and gevura. If your hands are not holding on to a sitter, probably it's better that they should be combined in this way. That's the wording of the Gemara. So now Rabbeinu Zal says you have to unite the left and the right. Even though you have to unite the left and right, ahavo and yira, ahavo, love, represents chesed, kindness, the right side, and yira, fear, corresponds with givura, harshness, on the left side, Rabbeinu Zal says still, they're not both equal. The yira must come first. The yira must be on bottom. The Gemara says when you're holding your hands, to see to it that the right hand should be on top, which means that the left hand is first. It's on the ground. It's the first one there is yira. On top of that, put the chesed. Why? Rabbeinu Zal explains, ki balavedo machzer alavedosoi. The Gemara says in Kiddushin that when it comes to a boy and girl getting married, it's two opposites that have to come together. Which one is supposed to seek which? Who goes after who? Who goes chasing after who? Or who goes looking for whom? The Gemara says the husband is the one that's supposed to go looking for the wife. Why? The Gemara says it's very simple. When a person loses something, a person has something in their pocket, a wallet, and they lose the wallet, who goes looking for who? The wallet goes looking for the person, for the owner. The person goes looking for the wallet. So too in the case of Chava, the woman who was a rib of Adam HaRishon, originally, and then she was removed from him, she represents, she symbolizes this aveda that's lost from the husband. And the husband is required to go seek out his aveda, go looking for his aveda. So Rabbeinu Zal explains, ki bal aveda machzer al avedosoi, a one who loses something goes looking for it. Darkoi shel ish lachzer acharisha. The Gemara says, from this we learn out that it's normal for a man to go looking for a woman. And the Gemara says, Moshe la'odam shavdol aveda, this could be compared to a person who loses something. Mi hoylechetz, who goes looking for who? The Gemara says it's the loser that goes looking for the lost article. Pirish, Rav Nosson Zal explains, ki ahavo hi bechinas ish, v'yiro hi bechinas isho, ki adua. It is known in the Zohar HaKadosh and in the writings of Kabbalah that a woman is associated with fear. It's a pasuk. We say it every Friday night. Isha, yiras Hashem, hi tisalol. A woman who has fear of Hashem, she is praiseworthy. So we see that the Isha is associated with yira, whereas the Ish is associated with ahava. There are psukim to support that also. So now, which goes looking for which? The woman goes looking for the man, or the man goes looking for the woman? It's normal for the man to go looking for the woman. Chesed goes looking for Yira. Therefore, Rabbein Azal explains, V'alkein, therefore, tzorech lahakdim es hayira. When a Jew wants to come close to Hashem, the person has to first see to it to develop their fear of Hashem, their respect for Hashem. Ki oz tovoy elov ho'avo memela. Because if you want to do two steps, if you want to have to go through two procedures, then try for Ahava first and then try for Yira. And maybe you'll get it. If you want to cut two steps down to one, if you want to be able to accomplish two things with one shot, kill two birds with one stone, all you have to do is go after Yira. All you have to do is develop your Yira of Hashem. The Gemara tells us the Ahava comes looking for Yira. So if you will have Yira, automatically Ahava will come to you. Automatically, Ahava comes seeking Yira, just like the man comes looking for the woman. Ki ho'avo hoileches umachzeres achar ha'yira tomid. Because this is a fact, and Rabbein Azal stresses this very much as a yesoid in religion. A person who wants to be successful as a Jew has to know that the Ahava will always come looking for the Yira. Because the rule is that the loser goes looking after his lost article. The man goes looking for the woman. The man is chesed, the woman is yira. Once you have yira, if you have the woman in your house, you know that the man is going to come looking for her. If you have been zeichet to acquire yira, you know that automatically Hashem is going to send you the ahava as a freebie. Kach shomati mipiv hakodosh beferish. Rav Nosson Zal says, I heard this directly from Rabbein Azal's mouth. In other words, he obviously wants to emphasize the importance of this as a yesoid in religion. And I once had the privilege of being in Eretz Yisrael. This is going back about 15 years ago. We were walking in Eretz Yisrael at the time on Har Tzion, near the Kever of Dovra Melech, with our Rebbe Zichron Avrocha. And we ran into a group of students of the Diaspora Yeshiva at the time. And their rabbi, Rabbi Goldstein, was with them. And he obviously knew our Rebbe from a long time ago. And they met each other. And, you know, right away there was you saw a serious respect. And Rabbi Goldstein immediately asked our rabbi, address them. Like he had a group of 15, 20 students with him. He said, give him something. Tell them something. And these were obviously Bali Tshuva that were just starting out. And this was the one item. Our Rebbe had 3 minutes to talk to them. This is the item that he picked to tell them, that you're starting out in religion, you should know that many people make a big mistake, whether it be in starting out in a relationship with Hashem, or starting out in a relationship between husband and wife, or starting out in a relationship between a student and a rabbi. Everybody knows that a relationship involves two. It involves chesed and gevura. That in a relationship, there's kindness, there's giving, there's sharing, and there's also a concept of respect. There's a concept of respecting the other person's wishes, even when it's not shared. That there are certain times that we don't share, and even when we don't share, it's done with a certain degree of dignity. Even if we don't share the same opinion, we don't agree on something, I don't punch your lights out, I don't blow you away. I respectfully disagree, whatever that means. It means compromise, it means sometimes we go by what you want, sometimes we go by what I want. Kaviyochel, the same, and this concept of Ahava and Yira, the question is, how are you supposed to line them up? Do they both come at the same time? And the answer is, the Torah says, in order for a relationship of this type to be solid, to be successful, the key to it is to put the horse in front of the wagon, not the wagon in front of the horse. What comes first is Yira. You have to start off with a basis of respect, of fear, of awe. You start with that. And if that's the foundation, if that's the groundwork, that we start off assuming that even when we don't agree, it's done with a certain degree of respect, then on that you can build ahava. You can automatically start identifying what you do agree in, what you do share. And if along the way you find suddenly, oh, we don't share, no problem. We don't kill it. We don't stab each other because we've already established the foundation of Yira. The Yira is there already. So too with a rabbi and a student. If a student wants to become close to a rabbi, the beginning has to be yira. There has to be a respect and fear. That works great when the rabbi is teaching you and he's answering all your questions and he's helping you and he's giving you. It's wonderful. What happens when the rabbi smacks you or he insults you, he asks you a question that you don't know the answer, and he embarrasses you, or he does something like that based on his understanding of what you need at the time? Unless the foundation of yira is there intact, chas v'shalom, the whole relationship could be blown, and the Talmud could lose out on tons and tons of what there is to be gained in this relationship. Therefore, the stress is first the yira, then the ava. Always by a Rebbe Talmud, and so too by Hashem. The Torah says, Reishis, the beginning, is Yiras Hashem. Reishis Chochma, before anything, comes fear of Hashem. Rabbeinu Zal says now, V'zeh b'chinas v'chishodi shodo proshogira. This is what the Gemara means, that when it says that when the archer shot the arrow, we said the archer was the chesed, prosho, lefaresh, to explain, is a concept of chesed. The ship won the race against the arrow. The ship went first. The ship came in first. Meaning that the yira was put in front of the ahava. That was the correct sequence. V'om Ravashi, and Ravashi said, Hahu gildeno diyamo, that you should know that that fish with which this ship was associating, that fish is called the gildeno of the yam. Rabbi Nizal says, Gildano, hi bechinas, shame. This word, Gildano, is a combination of two words. Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yud, which is the name of Hashem that represents Din. Dino de Malchusa Dino. Dino is Dalet, Yud, Nun, Aleph, like Hashem's name, Adni. And there's another name of Hashem that represents Din, which is the shame Aleph, Gimel, Lamed, Aleph. The Arizal discusses this in the Pri Etz Chaim, in the Kavonos of Shmoneh Esrei, where he says that the first words of Ato Gibor Li Olam Hashem in Shmoneh Esrei make up one of the names of Hashem. Ato Gibor Li Olam Hashem is Bigimatria. Ato Gibor Li Olam Aleph Gimel Lamed is Bigimatria 34, which represents one of the secret names of Hashem. When we take Hashem's name Ekyeh, Aleph, Hey, and then Yud, Hey, and we take the letters that come after that. After Aleph comes Beis, after Hey comes Vav, after Yud comes Chaf, after Hey comes Vav, the letters that follow Aleph, Hey, Yud, Hey are Beis, Vav, Chaf, Vav. Just like we say in the morning, V'ato Moshel Bakoil U'V'yotcho Koyach U'Gvura. The first letters of Bakoil, Uviyotcha, Koyach Ugvura, make up this special name of Hashem, which is the letters that follow Aleph Kei Yud Kei. The gematria of that name, Aleph Kei Yud Kei, of Beis Vav Chav Vav, is bigematria, this name of Hashem, Aleph Gimel Lamed Aleph, that name of Hashem. So now Rabbi Nizal says, this Gildano, he bechinas Shem Aleph Gimel Lamed Aleph, Shu bechinas Gvurois. The name of this fish had in it all the names of Hashem that represent Gevura, the name Aleph Dalet Nun Yud, plus this name Aleph Gimel Lamed Aleph, which is this Seid of Ato Gibor Li Olam, referring to the Gevurais of Hashem. Kihu Roshei Tevois Ato Gibor Li Olam Hashem Kemuva, as is brought me Kisvei Arizal, and in the Zohar HaKadosh. Ki Gildana Hu Oisiois Aleph Gimel Lamed, Gildana is made up of the letters Aleph Gimel Lamed, Ato Gibor Lolam Hashem, the first letters of Ato Gibor Lolam, Veshem Aleph Dalet Nun Yud Bishleimus, Hainu Shem Aleph Gimel Lamed Aleph. In other words, Aleph Gimel Lamed Aleph, the first Aleph Gimel Lamed is Ato Gibor Li Olam, the last Aleph is Aleph Dalet Nun Yud. In other words, as it appears in the Shmoneh Esrei. So it's two parts, Aleph Gimel Lamed, and the last Aleph is automatically included in the Shem Adni. So it's one combination. In other words, saying that this whole discussion of Rabbi Bar Chana was discussing the top of Yira in its fullest, all the benefits of Yira, what Yira is associated with, how to go about getting it, what it's used for, etc. All the details, and especially specifically how it affects tefillah, because we said Yiras Hashem hi tishalo, that Yira is what supports and really helps to qualify the tefillah. Now Rabbeinu Zal closes by saying that all of this is hinted to in a short pasuk in Tehillim. Everything we said so far. There's a pasuk in Tehillim that says, "Bachatzoitzrois v'koil shofar horiu lefnei Amelech Hashem," that with trumpets and with the sound of the shofar we blast forth to Hashem, Yiram Hashem, Tevel Yiram Hayom Umaloyo, let the ocean thunder forth, Tevel V'yoshvevo, and fill the entire earth, the entire world. Tevel is the world, V'yoshvevo, and all its inhabitants should hear the thunderous sound of this Yiram, of this thunder. Rabbeinu Zal says now, "V'ze pirish b'chatzos rezvikol shofar haynu al yidei b'chinas koil denofik hanal," through the sound of tefillah that a person says out loud, "Al yidei ze yiram hayom." Through that, he brings forth a ra'am, a thunder. Nasa b'chinas ra'amim. There's created thunder. Where does the thunder go off? In the brain. What is the brain? The yam ha'chochmo. Nasa b'chinas ra'amim. B'chinas koil ramcho bagalgal. The ram, the thunder, strikes the galgalto damoicho, the skull, the seat of the brain. That's yiram hayom. The ram, the thunder, is in the yam ha'chochmo, in the brain. Tevel v'yoshvevo. And what does it affect? Not only does it affect the brain, it affects the heart. The word tevel is made up of two parts, the letter tav and lev. Tav means to engrave, to inscribe something deeply. Rabbeinu Zal explains, ki tevel oisiois tav and lev. The word tevel is made up of the letter tav and the word lev. Tav Loshen Rishima. The letter Tav represents something digging in deeply, affecting something deeply. Kemo Shekosav, as the pasuk says in Yecheskel, Vehisvisa Tav. Hashem said to him, carve out an inscription on the foreheads of the Jews. So we see that Tav refers to something digging in deeply. Shenirsham Hakoil Belev. Yiram Hayam. When the thunder, when the sound of tefillah being said out loud strikes the brain, it'll also affect tevel. It'll also make an imprint on the heart. It'll smoothen out any of the crookedness that's found in the heart. As the Gemara says, "Loi nevru ramim elo lefashe takmimis shebelev," that the purpose of thunder is to smooth out this crookedness of the heart. And the pasuk continues, and what happens as a result of this? Once the heart is smooth, what comes after that? Simcha. The pasuk says, Nahorois yimchau chof, that rivers will clap their hands. Bechinas simcha, that's a clapping hands is a sign of simcha, joy. Uli yishrei lev simcha. We said that if a person has a smooth heart, he's zechet to simcha. Vayideya simcha, and through simcha, yachad horim yiraneinu. Rabbeinu Zal is going to explain each word now. Rino. Rabbeinu Zal says, Rino loshen tefillah. The word Rino is synonymous with tefillah. Kemay shekosav, as the pasuk says in Malachim, Lishmoya el horino v'el hatefillah. So Rino is synonymous with tefillah. Horim, mountains, bechinas tzadikim. That's one of the nicknames of tzaddikim that's used in the Gemara, in the Zohar HaKodesh. The pasuk says, "Eso enai el hehorim me'ayin yovo yesri." The medrash of the Gemara darshins that I lift up my eyes to the tzaddikim. It proves from Sukkim that tzaddikim are called horim, mountains. They're the ones who have overcome. Remember, we just learned recently that lo sid lofoy, Hashem is going to show the Yetzihara to the tzaddikim and the Rishon. To the tzaddikim, he's going to appear like a mountain, as if they overcame this huge mountain. To the Rishon, har seir. To the tzaddikim, it'll appear like a mountain. To the Rishon, it'll appear like seir, like a little hair that they weren't able to overcome. So we see that tzaddikim are associated with horim. Rabbeinu Zal says, "Hainu, this means al yidei simcha salev, through a person being zeicha to acquire this simcha in the heart. How? Through the thunder, the loud sound of the tefillah striking the brain and being mefashet, causing this ram which smooths out the lev. Yecholin lehispalel ulahalbish es tefiloson b'maymar. This gives the tzaddikim the ability to hide their tefillah in a maimar, in an ordinary statement, where they're not davening openly, where it's clear that they're making requests from Hashem, but rather they're hiding the tefillah. Mentally, in their mind, they're thinking about requesting things from Hashem, but their words are not a clear reflection of it. In their speech of proposing, you know, presenting it verbally, they're saying it as if they're discussing an issue, not as if they're asking for anything, because they realize that it's la'achar gzardin. Once he identifies that it's la'achar gzardin, he knows that if he says a regular tefillah as is, the malachim will make chop suey out of it. They'll chop it up because they're angry. And there's been a gzardin from Hashem. Hashem has issued a decree. They're in a position to harm the tefillah. But if they can't identify it as a tefillah, they can't do any harm to it. So if the words are not clearly reflecting a tefillah, it's only in the tzaddik's machshava that he's concentrating on what he wants, but verbally he hides it, that's what gives his tefillah the power to be effective, even l'acha gzardin. Kisheyovinu kinigzardin. When the tzaddik becomes aware that it's l'acha gzardin, he knows how to hide his tefillah in the maimar. The zepirish yachad. It says horim the tzaddikim yiranenu davin yachad. Together. What is together? Together implies two, meaning shemalbishim tfilosom besipurim yachad. They don't just have a tefillah, one item. They combine the tefillah with a story. They weave the tefillah into regular words. Rav Nosson Zal mentions in Likutei Halacha is many examples of this. For example, Sfira Soimar. What is that? What kind of baloney is this? Today is 65 days in the Omer. Who are we saying this to? Hashem? Hashem has a problem counting? And if we're saying it to ourselves, is there any significance to counting off in religion? Rav Nosson Zal says this is actually a form of this hidden tefillah. During those 49 days, which correspond to the Shiva Nikiyim, the 7 days of purification that a woman goes through to purify herself from Tumah, these Sheva Shabosos Tmimos, when the Jews were looking to scrape off all the mud and dirt and grime that they had picked up in Mitzrayim and purify themselves for Matan Torah, there was a procedure of Gevurois that they went through. They went through a very difficult time. How is the difficulty manifested? At this time of Gevurois, the tefillah must be nislabesh in a sipur. Sipur means a story. And Sipur is also Miloshin Sfira, counting. Because Rav Nosson Zal says, stories and counting are actually related. Because when do stories begin? Before Hashem created the world, could there have been any story? Then there was nothing. The whole concept of a story begins only once there is something, then there's something to tell. In nothing, within nothing, a person says, I have nothing to tell you about. Because if there's nothing, a person tells me, tell me what happened over there. The answer is nothing happened. Nothing I can't tell you about. So in relating a story could only be when there is one or more. In zero, there's no story. So too with counting, Rav Nosson Zal says, counting, the pasuk says, lifnei echod ma'ato sefer. Counting only begins from one also. So we see a relation between these two. This is just one example. Rav Nosson Zal gives many, many examples to clarify what the practical applications of this chapter are. In the tefillah in Rosh Hashanah, where we say those long paragraphs, which don't seem to be a tefillah at all, we're relating a story to Hashem. Ata nigleisa banan kvoidecho, you revealed yourself in the clouds, and you took us through the desert, and da-da-da-da-da. What's story time? It's Shemoneh Esrei. Shemoneh Esrei, you're asking things from Hashem. The answer is this is a tefillah that's hidden in a sipur. In your mind, you're thinking that Hashem, just like you took us through all of that and you helped us then, help us now. But verbally, you're only relating it as a story. Why? Because it's la'achar gzardin. It's on Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is a time of din. At a time of din, we have to hide the tefillah a little. We can't daven directly. The koil shofar, again, what's that? A blasting noise? What's noise? What are we taking groggers and making, you know, this isn't Haman, this is Rosh Hashanah. The answer is, again, it's a hidden form of tefillah. It's not an obvious tefillah. It's a loud sound. Within that loud sound is hidden the cries of the Jews. The whole sequence of the blowing of the shofar and the different variety of sounds sounds corresponds to different forms of crying, which means different forms of tefillah, but it's in hidden form. Halavai, we should be zeicher to study a chapter. This chapter is very difficult. I remember the first time I learned it, it looked like nothing to me. In other words, it looked like something I couldn't understand at all. You'll learn it, you'll review it a second time, and you'll finish Tehillat Imran, you'll do it again and again, you'll see it'll become clearer and clearer every time. We should be zeichet to understand what's written here, and to follow all the advice that we picked up in this chapter about the importance of simcha, the importance of davening out loud where it's appropriate, the importance of clearing out from one's brain what doesn't belong there, things that clog it, that don't allow the ramen, that don't allow the sound of the tefillah to affect your heart. And through this simcha, be zeicher to be able to help the tzaddikim in being able to know how to daven to Hashem.
Besides that, the scene is unnatural. Is it true?
Excuse me?
This whole thing with Rabbi Rechana,
The answer
besides
is...
Besides that it's unnatural, like, there's so many explanations, and it sounds like that it was a mashal just to...
The answer is these are called the guzmois of Rabbi Bar Barchana, the strange stories of Rabbi Bar Barchana. However, I believe it's the Marshur who, in introducing them, says, we definitely believe that these stories took place, that he saw them in physical form. It was shown to him as a nevuah, in a sense. For him, the great rabbi that he was, Rabbi Bar Barchana, this was shown to him to teach him many different lessons. Just like Moshe Rabbeinu saw the burning thorn bush. Why? Hashem wanted to show movies? The answer is this was a message to Moshe Rabbeinu that was hidden in this scene. The Mefarshim give us thousands of explanations as to what those thorns burning represented.
It wasn't a fish that big. He saw it.
The question is whether he saw it literally, physically, in an ocean, in a body of water. It seems from the way Rebbe Zal taught it that yes, he did. As far as I know, yes. And Hashem can't make it?
No,
Hashem who can make these fish could make a tzaddik out on the ocean. On the ocean you could see fish sometimes that look unbelievable.
The fish has to be close to a million miles.
Right? Not a million miles.
Yeah, because if it will pass for 3 days and it's going in 5 minutes about 240 miles.
It means that the ship traveled very quickly. Exactly, right. Obviously it was very, very large. Correct. Correct. Remember the story in the Gemara about a Rebbe who told his Talmidim about something that sounded ridiculous, then one of them saw it, and then he said, Rebbe, now I believe it now, go on and give your shiurim because I saw it with my own eyes. He said, you mean to say that because you saw it, you believe it, not because I taught it to you, not because it's written in the Torah? The Gemara says the rabbi looked at the student and he turned into a pile of bones. He died on the spot because he showed...